There's a dramatic change that's on display in today's first reading. It's a transformation that's so remarkable. In a way, it's a type of resurrection. And it's in the life of St. Peter. Just over a week ago, Peter denies Christ 3 times. And just a few days later, his proclamation of the kingdom is so profound that in today's first reading from Acts chapter 5, we hear that crowds bring the injured, the sick, the wounded to meet Peter in hopes that at least his shadow will fall upon them. How is such a transformation possible in a person's life in such a short period of time? The word overshadow only appears twice in the Gospels, the Greek word behind it. And it occurs in 2 places that are particularly significant. The first is in Luke chapter 1, when the archangel Gabriel appears to Mary. He says, "The power of the Most High will overshadow you." And the second place is a gospel we heard a few weekends ago in the Transfiguration. In Luke chapter 9, it says that a cloud overshadows the disciple in that moment in which Christ's glory is revealed. These are 2 hugely significant moments in Scripture. So the fact that this word is appearing again in today's first reading to describe St. Peter tells us that something extraordinary, revolutionary, has taken place in Peter's life. Somehow he has been overshadowed by the glory of God in a powerful way. When does this happen? How does this happen? We hear some information behind it in today's first reading from John chapter 20. It's a striking gospel passage. And the first line is particularly striking. On the evening of the first day of the week, when the doors were locked where the disciples were for fear of the Jews, Jesus entered and said, "Peace be with you." Fascinating line. There's a lot of detail beneath the surface. First of all, the doors are locked. It's not a trivial passing detail. It's almost a metaphysical commentary on their lives. The doors of their lives are locked. They are locked from the inside, out of fear. This is what happens in our lives, out of fear, as a natural response. We lock the door, in a sense, to be safe. This locked door, though, can be an obstacle to the life of God, to our Christian mission. C.S. Lewis said that hell is a door that is locked from the inside. In a way, it's possible to will to keep God completely out of one's life. But at the same time, Christ is entering, even in the midst of the locked door. The fact that he says, "Peace be with you," is particularly striking in light of the fear that they experience in this moment. It says in the passage that they're afraid of the Jews, but it's true to say they're afraid of everyone at this moment. They're afraid of one another, they're afraid of the Romans. In a way, they're probably even afraid of Jesus a little bit, because they're aware of what they did, how they acted in the last hours of his life. And if he does return, as he said, what are the odds that he's going to be particularly pleased with them? I suspect in a way that they were afraid of him. So the fact that he says not once but twice, "Peace be with you," accounts for a transformation taking place in each of their lives. If you think of visualizing the scene, I suspect too it was one of the largest collective sighs in humanity, that the response they expect is so different from the one they actually get. This is often the case with God. So we might ask the question, what is it that unlocks this door that we lock from the inside? This second Sunday of Easter's Feast of Divine Mercy explains how the door can become unlocked in us, how we can be overshadowed by the glory of God and become changed men and women. In May of the year 2000, Pope John Paul II canonized the Polish nun and mystic Faustina Kowalska. She was famous for her divinely received message about the mercy of God. The reason John Paul made this a universal feast was because he believed it was a universal message about the mercy of God, not just intended for a select few, but intended for everyone. And it's appropriate because, in a way, we can see all of the Christian mysteries revealed through the lens of mercy. Think of the Incarnation. Christ's birth, nativity. Part of our great joy in the Christmas season is because of the mercy of God in becoming one of us. We can't force God to become incarnate, to live amongst us, to walk amongst us. But the incarnation is a gesture of God's great mercy. We think recently of the season of Lent, Christ's suffering and death. It's a painful experience for us in the church. But at the same time, can't we say each of these stations of the cross, that entire experience in the cross itself, speaks to the mercy of God. Even the resurrection, Christ being restored to life and sharing new life, is a profound and utter mystery of God's mercy that is shared with us. I'd like to read a few lines from the end of Sister Faustina's diary. It's a really long book, so I'll read you the last words, kind of a summary. You can still read it by all means yourself. But I'd like to share just a couple lines with you. She says, "One day, when I was preparing for Holy Communion and noticed that I had nothing to offer him, I fell at his feet, calling down all his mercy upon my poor soul. May your grace, which flows down upon me from your compassionate heart, strengthen me for the struggle and sufferings, so that I may remain faithful to you. And although I am such misery, I do not fear you, because I know your mercy well. Nothing will frighten me away from you, O God, because everything is so much less than I know your mercy to be. I see that clearly." Everything is so much less than what we know God's mercy to be. This explains in a way not just Faustina's life. It explains Peter's life and how he is so dramatically overshadowed by Christ in his resurrection and in his mercy. In a way, he cannot help but become a changed person. The fact that we are here, we have the gift of life, is already a suggestion of the mercy of God in our lives. So, on the second Sunday of Easter, an invitation to enter more deeply into the Easter season is to consider, what have we done in our lives with the mercy of God? And what remains to be done in our lives and in our world with the mercy of God?